When we last left our heroes, they were locked into a terribly important discussion. Let's drop in on them again as they plot the future. Now, from the Top Dog's Kennel in beautiful downtown Burbank, it's the Terrence and Philip Show.
Thank you, Gary, and welcome to another episode of the Terrence and Philip Show. I am Philip Hodgetts.
And I'm Terrence Curran.
And we are the Terrence and Philip Show. So I'm going to ask you for help with a question.
Okay.
In general, who should be using what type of NLE? Now, you know, because I think, and I'm going to have to say, I really only know the Mac NLEs, the ones that overlap. So
okay.
Vegas users, I mean, I think Vegas is incredibly popular with event videographers and corporate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Gedius is fairly well established in some of the broadcasters.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, I don't really know these apps.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really want to venture into territory I know nothing about.
Yeah. So it's who? Yeah. Well, obviously in our market,
There's Media Composer, Premiere Pro, and Final Cut 10.
Right.
Now the fact is, of course, Final Cut 7 still exists, and
yes,
more people are still using Final Cut 7 than have migrated to any of the other platforms.
Yes.
It seems from various surveys. So let's assume that Final Cut 7 doesn't exist for the moment because it's not getting a future development, so it's eventually going to go.
Well, you can't assume that, because like I said, there's still a ton of
like,
people using
like
it.
That would be assuming that Meridian Media Composers have gone away.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I mean, we've gone from, obviously when AlphaDog started back, 10 years ago, it was, Avid.
Mm-hmm.
That's because we're primarily a finishing house, so we're driven by what the client's offline on.
Yeah.
So we were primarily Avid, and we got into Final Cut early for finishing because nobody else in town, the post houses all
didn't want to touch it.
Yeah, they poo-pooed it. And so there was a period there where it was Plaster City and Digital Film Tree and us were the places you went to finish Final Cut. So we got an early reputation for it. And by 2008, it was actually, I'd say 70% of our finishing was Final Cut.
Wow.
Which was really weird. Now, in the last year, it's flipped back the other way, where it's about 70% Avid now, finishing. Mm. So, on the higher end, that's happening. But that other 30% is still Final Cut 7, not 10.
Yeah.
I've only had one call for a Final Cut 10 project.
Mm-hmm.
And, after talking with them back and forth, they realized it would behoove them to go to 7 with their 10 project before bringing it in for finishing.
I see.
Gee,
how could they do that?
Yeah.
Isn't it a good thing that somebody made a translation?
We got you a sale. And then we have, I just now have gotten a project, somebody's asking us about a feature that they worked on, they're working on right now in Premiere, and they want us to, do the finishing. So this is the first Premiere job that's come in the door, but my spider sense is telling me this is going to be trouble,
To me, it's fairly clear. If you work in, the studio system, if you work Hollywood, film, feature film,
media
broadcast
composer,
television, if you're working stereo 3D, if you need to work in a collaborative editing
collaborative is the key,
it really, it doesn't matter whether or not you like the interface, you should be using Media Composer.
Right.
And if you are in the industries adjacent to those industries, you probably also need to be using Media Composer.
Right.
I mean, to me, that's really clear.
That one's, blatantly obvious.
Blatantly obvious.
So now, for all those other people out there editing, part of it is, what are you most comfortable with?
Yes.
I should
point out that I don't think there's a single bad tool in the marketplace.
No, I don't think so either. But, if I was, a self-contained shop doing everything myself, and not collaborative, I think Premiere's got a really good story because of the suite and the tight integration of the suite.
I completely agree. To me, the current Premiere and the...
I should say Adobe. Because it's all the products. Photoshop, After Effects.
The way that they're situating with the Creative Cloud and the rental, you might as well just have everything.
Right.
And to me, that's the perfect suite for people like Carrie Dismore and folks like that who and Rob Bernholtz and people who are self-contained who've got great After Effects and design skills as well as the editing chops to varying degrees I think that's the tool set that I definitely would have wanted a decade ago when I was that guy.
And it's also Mac or PC, so
Mac
you're
PC,
not limited by
not
that
limited that yeah And yet I see that the real growth has been in what, for lack of a better term, we're calling the democratized editing market, or the the broader professional, where it's, you know, on the principle it's more like a literacy than it is anything else, so that, you know, a relatively small group of literate people work using their literacy skills day in, day out, copy readers, proofreaders, you know, writers. But the vast majority of people use it peripherally. You know, they write a report, or they have to, you know, write a proposal, or they, you know, love letter, whatever.
Yeah, I think if you, you know, if you look at a student, if you were to take a student who, you know, or a kid or whatever, who'd never done anything, and you were to pick which one of these applications would be the easiest to teach them right off the bat, that's a different story. It's definitely not going to be Media Composer at that point.
No, no. Or Final Cut 7.
Or even Final Cut 7. So, yeah, it could be FCPX. It could be maybe Premiere. I'm not so sure. Vegas, maybe. It's kind of a, you know, for me, Vegas is a bizarre interface just because of how it's sort
history,
of developed.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I'm coming in from scratch, I have to, if I had to wipe my mind and come in from scratch, that might be, you know, an approachable one. Or, you know, there's the ones on the web. You use the YouTube editor or whatever, you know. Those are pretty simple for that kind of thing. I think, you know, something like, well, actually, iMovie would be better than FCPX, just because it's even simpler.
Yeah, but it's very easy to outgrow iMovie. And
well, yeah, but then you're talking about that, you know, we're talking about a new person coming in versus once you get more experience, then that opens up a wider range. The limit of Final Cut anything is it's Mac only, so...
Yeah.
You know, that means you're limited.
And Vegas have the exact opposite problem.
Exactly. Right. So, you know, in the cross-platform world, it doesn't matter which computer you have. Well, we didn't say smoke. We were supposed to say smoke.
Oh,
right?
Smoke on the Mac. Yeah. Well, you see,
it is an edit system now, supposedly. So.
Well, yes. Well, okay. Who is? I think Media Composer only needs to be concerned about classic Final Cut, which they don't need to be concerned about anymore.
Right. That's done. Yes.
But I think Smoke on the Mac is totally aimed at that same customer.
Yeah, probably.
Because it's not really, you know, something that, well, I'm only producing stuff, 25% of my job is about producing something, 75% is about doing something else.
Right.
Type of professional where it's part of their
profession. Yeah, no, that's not Smack.
And that's where the growth is. And that doesn't have, unless, you know, they're going to argue that you can finish everything, you can do everything you can do in the Adobe Suite in Smack. But
it's,
so,
yeah, no, it's, I don't think, you know, that, very powerful tool for compositing and all that stuff, but that means you have to learn it.
Yeah.
You're not going to learn that, you know, unless you're working on it every day for 6 months. You're not going to become proficient at it.
Yeah, so I'm not aware of the reasons that they would think that it's a good idea to put in the effort to produce a tool that really is designed as a competitor for Media Composer.
I don't think
it fits as a competitor for Premiere Pro, because it doesn't have the suite around it. It doesn't have
the performance power either. When I, you know, at NAB when they were demoing it there, you know, and they had it on an iMac.
Yeah.
You know, obviously they're trying to, you know, position it. Hey, look, this is the future. You won't need extra cards since you're not going to be able to get them.
Yeah.
look, we can run on the existing system. It's like, okay. And I'm like, I asked, and they're doing, here's a raw red file, right? And I'm going, well, what resolution you're playing that at? And he goes, well, it's quarter resolution. I said, well, what if you play it full? And he said, well, I'd have to render it to play. Meanwhile, Premiere's sitting over there running, you know, six streams of raw red real time.
Mm.
So it's like, okay. Okay, so how exactly are you competing? I'm missing, you know, yes, granted there's, you know, more compositing tools and all that, but if that's not what your whole workflow is, if you're trying to sell this as an NLE, you need the performance that the other NLEs have.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. Be interesting to see what happens with that. I can't.
And then, of course, there's Lightworks, where it's been something like...
It's free.
360,000 downloads.
It's free. Yeah.
Yeah.
How many people do you know using it?
Well, I don't know anybody. And
neither do I.
when that was put as a comment on my blog, the hypothesis, I said, well, I mean, how many of those have actually been opened?
Mm-hmm.
And how many have been opened more than once?
Right. Yeah, just because something's free doesn't mean, well, you know, that makes it better.
Free is... I believe it was Alex Lindsay that proposed that software should be free, but all training and support should be charged for.
Well, yeah, but then the people who write the software have to get a piece of that training. Well, otherwise, why would you write the software?
Yeah, but I mean, there are a number of people who do that model. I mean, MySQL and Red Hat Linux are both free, but you know, the companies that support them and make money from them actually sell support.
Okay.
They don't sell the software. and Alex's business did, you know, they got older versions of current software and gave them away free as training versions and then sold a lot of Pixel Core training for it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the model can work.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is, the thing that Final Cut 10 kicked up was that nobody voluntarily changes their workflow. I mean, people hated Final Cut 10 because, regardless one way or the other, it made them have to learn something new. And right. Nobody really wants to spend the time to learn something new. I mean, I you know.
Not unless you're going to get a big return out of it.
Well, you know, all that stuff, all that, those 10, 11 years of knowledge about the inner workings of Final Cut Pro 1 through 7.
Right.
That knowledge itself.
Yeah.
Deprecator, you know. Yeah. I'm sorry, you got to take a big write-off.
Yeah. Well, that's it. You know, I mean, it's funny because I would get, you know, I could use Final Cut. I never became proficient at Final Cut, but I had other people here to do that.
Yeah.
And you know, most of my skill in Final Cut came from having to troubleshoot stuff all the time. You know, once you have to troubleshoot and figure it out, you really get how it works.
You do.
And so, you know, and I'd have people ask me, well, you know, you're an Avid guy. You don't like Final Cut or whatever. It's like, no, it's not that. It's just for me to dedicate the amount of time to truly mastering something, you have to make that worth it to me. Why? Yeah. You know, I didn't have to do that. There was still Avid work for me to do, so I didn't need to do it financially. There's nothing that I saw in Final Cut that was like so dramatically better was going to make my life easier or quicker than, you know, working in Avid.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no incentive there. So really, it was all, you know, there was no reason. I never saw a reason to have to become, you know, the super expert in Final Cut.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. That's the thing.
I'm the same way about Media Composer.
You don't have to.
It just doesn't feel comfortable. For me, coming from my Media 100 Final Cut background.
Right. I mean, you could do it. If somebody said, I'm going to pay you $300,000, you know.
I'd be up to speed within a week.
Precisely, you know.
And by the second week, I would just be awesome on Media Composer.
That's my point. You know, it's like there has to be some incentive there, either financial or, you know, I just love working in it, or it makes my life so much easier because, and really, between Final Cut, you know, and Media Composer.
There you are, Bob and Mariana. That's your challenge.
Yes. Yes.
You know my price.
Right. And, you know, it's funny because you see, you know, the Final Cut editors coming to Avid complain about Avid, and the Avid editors going to Final Cut complain about Final Cut. And the reality is that, you know, you can get just as much done in either one of them in basically the same period of time. There, you know, it just depends on the kind of work you're doing.
The interface is not what slows you down. It's actually making edit decisions that slows you down.
Exactly. So, you know, in my universe, the finishing part, certainly Symphony is much easier to finish in than Final Cut was.
Oh, yeah.
It's a very small part of the overall workflow for the universe. So you know.
And a tool designed for a specific part of that workflow as opposed to a tool that was a general purpose workflow.
Right.
Speaking of odd numbers.
Yeah.
And this is probably germane to this discussion, but I was rereading, because I took a like 4-day break over the last weekend, went up to visit a friend in Colorado and spent it out in the woods, in the aspens.
Oh, cool.
And picture postcard perfect, perfect time with aspens. You know, tomorrow it's going to be like snowing at the same location.
And
we had 60s and 70s, you know.
So one of the 10 good days a year up there?
Four of them in a row. The last day we were there, the second last day we did a big walk and, you know, perfect blue sky. Anyway, and while there, I was rereading John Buck's excellent Timelines 2 book, the history of the first digital nonlinear up to about 2000-2001.
Okay.
And what struck me was that Andrew Baum, the first product manager for Final Cut Pro 1, at the time of launch said, well, yes, we expect to sell about 25,000 in the next 2 years.
Wow.
And, of course, it was in – and I cannot find the numbers for the life of me. So anyone can find the points where Apple announced 120,000 users and then 400,000 users. I've been trying to Google those, but they're such generic terms that
right.
If anyone – Oliver, if you've got that anywhere in your records, or anyone's got that, please email me, philip@intelligentassistance.com with those data points. But certainly, you know, within 10 years, that should have been about 120,000 users at the expected anticipated take-up rate.
Right.
And they got that within, I think, 3 years, which is why we suddenly had that big take-up of let's buy Silicon Grail, let's buy Prismo Graphics, let's let's buy an audio company.
Right.
Let's build a whole suite here because we think we've got an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Because suddenly we're selling a whole lot more. Now, I think they realized later that they sold them to the wrong They were selling, they weren't selling them to the people that needed all that. They were really selling it to the independent producers.
Democratized. That's exactly it. They thought we're going after this business, but it was a new business that was developing.
Mm. Josh Melica talks about being on the campus a couple of years in when there were still DV creators were still training,
mm-hmm.
and he had a group of about 20 people, and a senior marketing executive comes into the room and starts, you know, do you mind if I ask who the audience is? So how many people here are from, you know, working on film? Nobody. How many people here are working in television?
Mm-hmm.
And nobody. And apparently Josh tells the story that apparently this executive was somewhat shocked at this point,
mm-hmm.
that the results. So it's like, well, where do you work? Oh, well, I work for a church. I work for a school. I work for another company. I work
right.
in, you know. They were,
yeah,
they,
because that's what it was. It was a new market.
Yeah. And this was this is what's Final Cut grew, was this market of mm-hmm. democratized professionals, people who don't necessarily edit full-time every day,
right.
but who do need to shoot and edit and produce. And I think that's the market that Final Cut 10.
Yeah, that's definitely the market definitely 10 is after, yes.
And I think the thing with Final Cut 10 is once the meme gets out that it's fast,
mm-hmm.
then that's a hard marketing message to get over, get past with producers. You know, fast equals cheaper for them.
Mm-hmm.
And once that message gets out, producers start to dictate faster, if they can.
Yeah, but it has to be proven. That's yeah. the, you know.
It is actually a very consistent meme. Everybody that uses it, the first thing mm-hmm. they say is, why do you like it? It's fast.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing I saw with Jerry Hoffman, why do you like it? He said, it's fast. I'm so fast with it.
Mm-hmm.
And the three stories, every one of them mentioned the three success stories they published around at AB time frame. Every one of them mentioned that they were faster in 10. So. I have not yet come across somebody who said they are slower in Final Cut 10 than anything else they use. So that's the only point I'm going on is that.
Well, I've run across plenty of people who said that if they actually used it to do their current workflow, they would be way slower because of the audio problems. So they can't even try it.
No, there are people who can't try it.
So it depends on workflows, et cetera. Know.
Which is why
I would hope that just generally moving around and doing things in the timeline, it should be faster. It's new code, you know. Yeah. It should be screamingly faster than all the other systems.
It's actually the magnetic timeline that makes it fast.
Hmm.
The thing that, you know, people's like, well, if only they change the magnetic timeline and give me tracks, then I'd be happy with it. It's like,
mm-hmm.
yeah, the only thing that makes it fast is the fact that it doesn't have tracks and a magnetic timeline, so that's not going to change.
Yeah, that unfortunately makes it hard for certain workflows.
Well, but this is what we're talking about.
Yeah,
you don't try and push a workflow that Final Cut 10 doesn't solve.
Oh no, absolutely. I don't think Apple's done anything wrong with 10 at all. I mean, I know there's a lot of people who are pissed off
about where it was launched, but
you know,
have to learn something new. But
right, well, that's it. You know, but what I do think is that, you know, I mean, there's still that market for the other places to fill in. Our market is definitely not the Final Cut 10 market, but who cares? I mean, there are other tools to use.
Exactly.
Get over it. You know?
I don't want
a hammer that tries to work everywhere.
Exactly.
You know, it's like Avid sold their, you know, Pinnacle consumer software division. They finally realized, you know, that's not really what we do. Why are we trying to be?
Yeah, remember there was an analyst that said they were making the wrong decision because they weren't putting enough focus on the consumer software, which is going to be the future of the business. You know, so.
Yeah, not really. Not their business.
Not their business, no. Yeah,
You know, that they're going to compete with Apple. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think what people forget is, relatively speaking, Apple has just so much money in the bank. That, you know, they could buy and chew up Avid at a petty cash if they felt there was any benefit in it.
Well, exactly.
And same with Adobe. I mean, Adobe's tiny compared with Apple.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know.
Of course, then there'd be the, you know, or the you get into the monopoly stuff.
And, well, yes, and, you know, what is the market?
Right. What is the market? Yes.
Yeah, that's where defining what is the editing market would be a fun piece of, I think, probably $2 million worth of lawyers' time to define the way they want to define it.
No, it'll be interesting to see if you know, like Blackmagic ends up buying Avid, or buying the NLE division of Avid or something like that.
Well,
that
would be I'm certainly not ruling that out.
I'm not ruling it out either.
I say it jokingly at the moment, but, you know, underneath the joke is, well, you know,
it could happen.
They've gone down one end into the camera end, and logic says that they would.
All they're missing is an NLE.
There is something into the editing side. They've got every other piece of the equation.
Right.
So, you know, if not Avid, what? But,
right.
You know.
Well, Lightworks has already been grabbed, so...
Yeah, Lightworks...
So what else is out there, yeah?
I don't know.
Yeah. And, I mean, again, Avid, one of the big beauties of, Media Composer, just like Premiere, is that it's cross-platform. So you're not limiting, you know, you could be really limiting your future on the Mac side, not knowing where they're going with their product development, which is kind of scary being in a trapped universe. It's nice to know you can go either way. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can buy, you know, a really powerful PC workstation with 7 slots available in it that I can add cards to and change them out later on to higher power cards and not have to buy the CPU all over again. Or I can wait until Thunderbolt gets up to speed. Because that's kind of what, that's the future I'm given right now.
Yeah. And it's not there yet.
No. So anyways, so which one? I don't know. Vegas, I've only ever had one project come in that the woman cut on Vegas, and it was her documentary film, and she did it on Vegas because somebody at Sony convinced her. It was really weird. And that was just ended up being a, you know what, spit out an uncompressed QuickTime, and we'll fix it in here. You know?
We'll slice it up.
We'll slice it up and, yeah, run it through color, and boom, that was it, you know. That's it. That's the only one I've ever, the only call I've ever gotten in all these years from Vegas.
But my understanding is that there are a couple of 100,000 users and...
It doesn't it's not this market, yeah.
You know, I'm known largely because, you know, Douglas Spotted Eagle has been a major Vegas proponent from day one.
Mm-hmm. So, well, it's powerful. You were here when they did the demo.
Yeah, I remember that demo. Yeah. Like,
what was that, like 2004 or something?
Something like that. And they had a laptop, you know, really beefy, probably HP or laptop. But and that was Tim
Duncan.
Tim Duncan did the demo.
Yeah, he did a demo. We're all watching, and he's like, he's got, you know, one sequence is playing, and then he's editing on another sequence.
Well,
which
it's
is
a separate
playing.
Instance because he's opened up another instance. So he's got one looped background instance of the app running in the background, processing video, and then he builds up a timeline out of everything.
Yeah, and then he's trimming edits down the timeline as it's playing up towards where he's trimming. And I'm just like, you've got to be kidding me. And we're all looking, where's the horsepower here? You know, there's no cards. This was still when Avid was in cards. You know, there were, you know. Yeah, because this was before Adrenaline and all that. So Avid was still, it was dedicated cards to get the processing power. And they were doing all this. And everybody in the room was just going, how in the hell are they doing that? That was an audio application, basically, that they bolted video onto, if I remember correctly.
Audio engineers started it, yeah.
Yeah.
And then, of course,
which was why the interface was really bizarre.
Yeah, well, it didn't start from the paradigms. That it didn't start by asking video editors, what do you want? It's more or less, well, what can we do?
Yeah.
It's got its own fans and certainly big user groups and a lot of good stuff going on there, so...
Yeah, they were early to the Raw Red game, I think.
Probably. They were also early to the 64-bit game. They were early to pretty much all, you know, I think somewhere in the Final Cut 10 release, somebody did Vegas first of all the new features in 10.
Wow.
Saying that,
okay.
But, you know, it doesn't impact on our universe, so we're not really aware that, you know, yes, they've been 64-bit for 2 or 3 years. You've been able to throw pretty much anything into a timeline at any time, and it'll just play out, and real-time effects. They just, you know, some really clever engineers built it right down on the rawest, deepest level of what Windows can offer, and did great work with the code. Yeah, it's taken the most to-date manufacturers longer to catch up.
Yes. Well, I mean, I feel for, you know, Avid and Adobe and that, you know, they've got older code and they can't do what Apple did. They can't go, okay, we're just, you know, screw all you guys. We're starting all over.
No.
They'd have a revolt.
Yeah, but they did it, you know, Avid rebuilt slowly.
They're doing a piece at a time.
So they could actually run mostly in 64-bit mode, and Adobe did the whole media engine in one pass, and then, CS5, and then CS6 was, let's revisit the interface. And,
right.
You know, simplify and...
Yeah, and where Avid's approach has been...
don't change anything.
Well, no, because what they have is, if you watch when Avid's starting up, you actually see it launches all these different programs. It's a bunch of different programs, you know, and so they were revising different parts of the program over, you know, the last several years. Mm. Last probably 4 or 5 years, they've been building out different renewing the code in the different areas. Yeah, the 64-bit code they've been working on for, you know, over 2 years to get that, and the UI. And those two things were major bottlenecks for them moving forward. Getting the 64-bit done now, that opens up obviously all the RAM that they could ever need, which solves a lot of problems for them. But the bigger thing was the UI, and it's not the actual what you're seeing in the UI. It's that all of that stuff was written back in 1990 code, you know, and you would really understand this part. You know, it's like if you want to go, well, let's have a resolution independence. Well, you can't just reshape a window to a something other than 16x9 or a 4x3 when that's very deeply written into the old code. Yeah. So now that they've gotten away from that, now they can start focusing on, you know, getting these new features and everything. But those two things were huge, huge rewrites for them, you know, because that's the kind of the core underpinning of the whole software. So, and obviously there was a bunch of bugs to work through when you do something like that. So I think, you know, going forward from here, I think we'll see some pretty wild improvements going on. At least I hope so. But yeah, and Adobe, of course, you know, well, they threw everything out and rewrote Premiere years back, which is when they should have renamed it. But argument.
I had that discussion with the then senior product manager, and you know, there was a lot of brand investment in Premiere,
which was all negative.
Wasn't all negative in the market that they actually served.
Well, okay, that would be true. Anybody who was using it would be happy, I suppose. But it's all the other people who tried it and said, "I've never used this."
Yeah, but those people were not customers. So you know, if you need to move a customer base forward, then you need to work from where your customers are and bring them with you. And I think probably at the time, Premiere Pro was the right way to go. Maybe at some other point, calling it something different might have been. They could have reverted back to Hitchcock.
Yeah.
They had that name.
Or something. I don't know. It's an interesting... I guess it's an interesting challenge.
Always.
Always.
You know, renewing old code and keeping code fresh is difficult.
Speaking of which, I had a question the other day, which you would be the guy to ask about that maybe you can't answer. We got the new system software out, Mountain Lion.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's presented a problem for Avid because all of a sudden they have to have this certificate issue.
Oh, yeah, don't tell me.
Workarounds on all that. And I'm looking at this and I'm going, you know, are they moving towards, like, on the next release, they're going to force everybody to go through the App Store? Which makes sense from Apple's standpoint because they get to make a third of everybody's chunk, you know?
Actually, what they did in Mountain Lion was make sure and make it very clear that is not the direction they're going.
Okay.
You have to go into the App Store, you have to go through a sandboxing process.
Right.
Sandboxing is incredibly complex. It's what keeps Event Manager 10 out of the App Store. There's just no way, because we move folders in and out of a folder created by Final Cut Pro 10, we can't go in the App Store.
Okay.
Because only Final Cut Pro 10 is allowed to move those folders. So,
okay.
You know,
you can't do anything external to your program.
Pretty much.
In Final Cut 10, you can't be in the App Store.
Yeah, you can't issue Apple events, you know, to other applications. So that leaves it, well, if it doesn't go in the App Store, how are you sure that this isn't a rogue app? So this is probably the point where Avid are at, isn't it? I don't imagine they're planning to go in the App Store anytime real soon.
Oh, they would want to do that.
But I mean, they do need
just like you've talked about, every time you do a bug release, you got to go through the whole approval process again. Can you imagine that with Avid?
Yeah.
Plus, they give away a third of their income.
Yeah, which they do to dealers anyway.
Well, not. I bet they don't give a third.
They don't? Okay. Yeah. Well, our dealer margins are much better. Well, this is the certification. So now the dealer is certified by Apple, and they sign their code.
Okay.
And so when the code is signed, Gatekeeper, which is the process that's in Mountain Lion, depending on your setting, if the code is signed, then it will run just fine. If the code is not signed, then it throws up a warning.
Okay.
And that's what you're seeing, is that this is from a developer that we don't know and therefore can't trust, so proceed cautiously.
Okay. But it'll still run then if you say
you have to then cancel out of that dial. You can't just double click it won't run it. You can go into your gatekeeper settings and say, look, just run anything, I don't care. But I don't recommend that. You know, leave the gatekeeper on, but just, you know, right click on or command O on the actual application to open it. The dialog that comes up will be slightly different. It'll still be a warning, but there'll be an open it anyway button. And so
this is like Microsoft with the signed.
Yeah, code signing is actually something that should have been in the OS, and it's not to the same degree in Microsoft's OS either. But signed code is a great way of preventing malicious software.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't require the Mac App Store, and it doesn't require you to be sandboxed to be signed.
Okay.
So that's the important distinction. Code workflow, you know, workflow apps will never be able to go in the App Store because of this sandboxing.
Because they can't talk to each other.
They can't talk to each other. What's the point of a workflow application that can't talk to anything?
Right.
So, Lumberjack is not, you know, App Store capable either. And
So how does that work with so Motion and Final Cut don't really talk to each other when you go back?
That part of the process would be very easily sandboxable.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, getting Final Cut sandboxed is going to be quite a challenge. And then having developers being able to talk to a sandboxed application. Because mm-hmm. when you've sandboxed application, just opening file paths doesn't make no. You can't just open a file path anymore. You've got to get a particular type of bookmark to the file path that you've then got to ask the system to open for you properly so you can...
So Final Cut is not sandboxed?
Currently, no.
Just because they're in-house, they get around it?
You know what? They get away with very little in-house. Mm-hmm. One of the first things we were warned is we can give you no help with the App Store.
Right.
You know, we have our own problems with the App Store, so we're not taking on yours.
Wow.
So, at some point in time, to be consistent, Apple will have to sandbox it.
Wow.
And that's going to be a serious piece of engineering, but it's currently not sandboxed.
Glad I don't have to deal with any of that.
Yeah,
because I was concerned about that going forward. I think that would be, you know, that'd be fucking painful for Avid.
If Apple ever enforced an App Store only distribution approach, I think that would be the demise of our work on that platform.
Wow.
Because we really, most of our apps could not, you know, workflow apps, and certainly what we're planning to do with Lumberjack and mm-hmm. going forward on that cannot go into the App Store. So.
Okay. So they can't really cut out all the...
I don't think they can, and I think they know that. I mean, the App Store is great for the sort of things that consumers buy.
And okay.
The OS is definitely going into this friendlier space for the majority of their people.
Right.
And yes, it causes...
That's what makes us nervous.
Yeah. But as long as we've got certification for developers, we can mm-hmm. certify that this is coming from a known developer.
Right.
So yes, it's not sandboxed, because you want it to do something useful mm-hmm. in a workflow, so it will allow us to do that.
Okay.
And so I'm fairly comfortable with it. Now, the other side of this, though, is that people want to buy from the App Store.
Mm.
We've had a lot of pressure to, you know,
why is
Event Manager 10 in the App Store? We'd like to buy it from there instead. And well, we can't put it in there because of the sandboxing rules.
Mm-hmm.
And even if we limited it to only external drives, the same thing would apply, because this folder was created by Final Cut Pro. You can't move anything. I know. It's just one of the things you live with. You complain about it all you like, but...
Yeah, no, it's not going to change.
It's not going to change very much anyway, so... You know, and it's... Overall, it's a good thing. Sandboxing is a good thing. And, you know, certification of developers is an excellent thing.
Mm-hmm.
So these are relatively minor pains, transient pains, as we go into something that probably should have existed for years.
Which is?
Certification of developers.
Oh,
you know, signed code from certified developers, from known developers, and sign the code. That really is something that should have been in every OS from day one, but of course we didn't have malicious people at day one.
Yeah. Well, and there's also the I want to be free atmosphere in the computer world, and to have somebody say, well, if you want to play in our world, you have to be approved by us, that smacks a little of control.
Yeah.
That a lot of people don't like. So.
Yeah.
I would never want to be in the situation where you can't run an application unless it's been approved by them.
No, and I wouldn't even like the OS to stop running applications that weren't even from certified developers, that weren't code signed.
Yeah, that's
I'd like the option. Yeah,
I want the option. Yes, because otherwise you're going to stifle.
Yeah.
Creativity and invention, etc.
It's not stifling a lot of it on the iOS, though. I have to say that there's some very creative apps on that are working within what has effectively always been a sandboxed environment.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there's no workflow tools on an iPhone or an iMac.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, iPad. Our workflow tools on Macs, and we need to be able to access them. I think we flogged that to death.
I think so too.
it's a good thing that causes pain in the short term, and that's so often the case. Just like improving a freeway, the traffic gets worse.
Yeah, that never does work, does it?
No. Well, and by the time you fix it, the traffic's increased again. Anyway, if you need to finish something like we need to finish this show, then you need to bring it to Alpha Dogs.
That's right. And if you are looking to ease your workflows in post-production, you need to wander on over to intelligentassistance.com to check out all the great tools to make your life easier, like the soon-to-be-released Lumberjack.
Like Lumberjack, yeah. And it's better than okay for Monty Python fans. And until next show, do something creative.
Thank you for listening.